Okay. We'll try again. Welcome, everybody. Is there anybody here that's very new? Like, somebody that doesn't know who Maharaj Parikshit is? Okay. Good. Okay. You know what Srimad Bhagavatam is?
Yes.
Okay. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is described within the Bhagavatam and by the other Puranic literature. Purana means history. The portions of the Vedas that describe the teachings in the context of history. The teachings are there. But it's embedded within stories about Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That's called Purana. It's histories. Real histories, not fiction. Real history. And then instructions about how to achieve the goal of life. Those that have and those that haven't because of mistakes. So you learn how to and mistakes to avoid through history. Amongst those Puranas, there's one that's described as being foremost, or the emperor amongst kings. And you're familiar with the modes of nature. Modes of goodness, passion, ignorance. Even in the mode of goodness, Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita, there's a mix of some passion, some ignorance, but predominantly goodness. But there's competition for the modes, so sometimes even the mode of goodness may be prominent. Sometimes passion will come, sometimes ignorance will come, and then again goodness. But there's a condition called unmixed goodness, or Vishuddha Sattva. No ignorance, no passion, just goodness. The Srimad Bhagavatam is described as that literature, which is amala, spotless, no mixing of the modes of nature. It's simply glorification of the personality of Godhead and his devotees and the process of devotees serving the personality of Godhead and the different exchanges of love that take place. Even they may be in this plane, but they're experiencing love in the spiritual dimension. The speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Shukadeva Goswami. He was the son of... She knows, right? The speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam was Shukadeva Goswami, who is the son of the author, or I should say, compiler, of all the Vedas. Before the Vedas were written down, they were present in sound, through teacher to student. The teacher would teach. The student didn't have a tape recorder, they just had a good memory, because it was different ages where people had that kind of memory. They could hear something once and remember it and understand it and apply it and become realized just by that kind of hearing. But when the age of Kali was about to begin, Vyasadeva understood people aren't going to be able to remember like that, so he had to write it down. So that was a service that he did. And then there was this one portion of the Vedas that he didn't write down yet. He taught it to his son, Shukadev. And Shukadev was, he was, let's just say this, he was realized, he was transcendentally realized. He was beyond the modes of nature also. But he hadn't realized the personal feature. It's something that we spoke about last night and then again in the class this morning, because the verses in the Bhagavatam were discussing personalism and impersonalism and voidism. So impersonalism and voidism may get some idea of trying to go beyond the contaminations of the material atmosphere. But the personal feature of the Supreme Lord may not be something that's on the radar screen, not something that they have even a sense of. The Bhagavatam is speaking of the personal aspect of the Supreme. So Shukadeva was realized in the impersonal feature, or Brahman realized, but he hadn't yet understood or realized the personal feature. So his father instructed him in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then later Shukadeva Goswami spoke it. And the person who he spoke to was the emperor of the world at that time, who was the grandson of the Pandavas. You know who the Pandavas are? Yes, okay. So the Pandavas' sons were killed during the battle of Kurukshetra. One of them, Abhimanyu, was mercilessly surrounded by, he was 16 years old, but like a very, very intense Kshatriya. But six generals surrounded him and ganged up on him and cut off his arm, and he was still fighting. He was an intense person. And they killed him. And then there were younger sons, five, because of each of the five brothers had one son of Draupadi, their wife, and they were killed mercilessly while they were asleep at night. So there was no heir to the throne except a grandson, because that 16-year-old Abhimanyu was married to Uttara, and a child was conceived before the battle. The child was within Uttara's womb, and there was an attempt by a Brahminical weapon, a mantra weapon, to kill the child in the womb. Ashvatthama released that weapon. And Uttara, the mother, came running to Krishna. Krishna! Krishna! This Brahmastra weapon is fast pursuing the child that's within my womb. Please protect the child within my womb. Let the Brahmastra kill me, but protect the child. Krishna! So Krishna protected the child. He manifested a form about the size of a thumb within the womb of Uttara, and using his Sudarshan chakra, he repelled the heat weapon. It's called the Brahmastra. He checked the weapon, so the child was protected. But still, there you know, a heat weapon stopping a heat weapon. It was, the Bhagavatam describes, it was hot. Yet his very tender skin was, because he was a Kshatriya by spirit, although he wasn't yet born, he was able to withstand the heat, and he survived. But that same Maharaj Parikshit was given a blessing in addition to saving his life. Even before he was born, he saw the Supreme Lord. Like, Haribol. He saw the Supreme Lord like that. Like, I'm seeing you and you're seeing me. When he was still within the womb of his mother. And so he was famous before he even did anything. Before he was even born. He was a very famous personality. And there are four or five chapters in the first canto of the Bhagavatam that are describing his greatness. One of them is I just narrated. So he was famous for the Lord having protected him. He was famous for, so he was, in other words, he was already favored by Krishna. He was given the name at the time of his birth of Parikshit, which means examining, or the examiner. He was looking again for Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is his whole life was looking for Krishna. Because he had become attached to Krishna in that way. There's a whole chapter dedicated to the ceremony at the time of birth. Vedic culture has the ceremony that part of it is qualified astrologers do the calculation of the birth chart of the child and tell what the qualities of the child will be, what the life of the child will be like. And there's a whole chapter of that because Yudhisthira, the elder of the five Pandavas, was particularly concerned that there would be an heir to the throne, and was he a qualified person. So the glories of Maharaj Parikshit were told first before he was born, then as soon as he was born, a whole chapter describing his greatness, and then further chapters after he became king, how he ruled, and he ruled with great virtue and great strength, and everyone was protected, or that his principles were being followed. Except after Krishna's departure, it marked the beginning of Kali Yuga. So he was ruling at the very, very beginning of this Kali Yuga. And the condition during Kali Yuga happened very quickly. The personality of Kali started doing his mischief. And one of the things that the personality of Kali does is he violates or induces others to violate religious principle. So there he was in part of Maharaj Parikshit's kingdom, dressed like a king with a club in his hand and breaking the leg of a bull. He had three legs broken when Maharaj Parikshit arrived. He heard this, there's this person doing this in your kingdom. And he was at once chivalrously angry, at the same time very happy. Oh, combat. So he got on his chariot and brought his whole army to deal with this person. We'd have a head of state really busy today if every time there was an animal that was injured, they had to get on their chariot and go and stop him. But he did. And he confronted the personality of Kali. In fact, that the Bhagavatam says he had his sword raised and was ready to chop off his head for this merciless act. But then he asked the bull that was being beaten, can you identify who the perpetrator is? Although, you know, the man was there with the club in his hand. Then there's this very interesting dialogue where Dharma describes, well, it's very difficult to say what's the cause of action. Some people say this, and some people say that, and some people say it's very difficult to say what the cause of action is. And then the personality of Kali surrendered to Maharaj Parikshit and said, I'm surrendered, here's my white flag, I'm declaring a truce, and please give me protection. Please give me a place in your kingdom where I can live. So Maharaj Parikshit, being a dutiful king, followed Dharma. Here's someone who surrendered, so I'll spare him. So you can live where their sinful activities are going on. He specified the very same four regular principles that we follow. Wherever there's meat eating, wherever there's gambling, intoxication, whoever there's illicit sex, you can reside there. And he said, well, that's not fair because those things don't go on in your kingdom. I have no place to live. Then Maharaj Parikshit said, very well, wherever there's hoarding of gold, wherever people are miserly and just gathering resources, surely those corruptions will come into their life, so you can reside there. So he dealt with very strongly with violations of Dharma and even just cruelty, outright cruelty to others. Very strong king, very virtuous king, very dear to Krishna, very devoted to Krishna. In other words, the picture is being presented purposefully.
Some space.
If you're going to do it, do it. Don't have to do it. Again, this is an illustration of through a story or through an actual history, we're being instructed. And in this particular case, we're being instructed about the qualification of someone to receive the message of Srimad Bhagavatam because he is the receiver. Maharaj Parikshit. And Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker or the broadcaster of the Bhagavatam. So, in order to have transcendental knowledge successfully passed on, you need a proper transmitter and proper receiver. So what's the qualification of a receiver? In this first canto of the Bhagavatam, there are six examples to illustrate through history what's the qualification to receive the message of Srimad Bhagavatam properly. Which is very important for us because we're to receive the message of Srimad Bhagavatam properly. What qualifications must we have? It never mentions you have to have some college degree. Never says that. You have to have an SAT score of something and a grade point average of something, and you have to have gone to at least one of these 10 colleges or something like that. It doesn't say that. It's not academic acumen. That's a qualification. In fact, the qualification is the things that are described about Maharaj Parikshit. Then, although Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, I was very surprised as a new devotee because I always heard he's spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. He doesn't appear until the second canto, or he doesn't speak until the second canto. Although the Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. So the whole first canto, the solution or the answer is, the one who is being recorded in the first canto is one who heard Shukadeva Goswami speak it. Sutta Goswami is then asked by sages to explain what they heard from Shukadeva Goswami, only in the form of different types of questions. So this qualified receiver is being described. And then to set the stage for the speaker to enter into the story, into the history, into the drama, this most perfectly qualified person does something that a qualified person would never do. And there are three things. There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita, Api chet sudaracharo vajate mam ananya bak sadur eva samantavya. Does anyone know that verse? It's in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna has described its ninth chapter is about pure devotional service and the most confidential knowledge. And at the end of that chapter, after describing what pure devotional service is, Krishna says that even if such a qualified person does something very bad, Achar means behavior. Prachar means what you say, and achar means what you do. Prachar and achar, or conduct, or like etiquette. Sadachar is good behavior, good conduct. Like we teach courses in Vaishnava etiquette, Vaishnava achar. So achar means behavior, and dur achar is bad behavior. And su dur achar is very bad behavior. So the verse begins. It says, even if it's never going to happen, but let's just say it happens, just for hypothesis sake. Supposing someone who's very, very qualified devotee does something very bad, but their primary qualification is apichet su dur acharo bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak. Bhak. Vajate Mam Ananya Bhak. They're engaged in undivided devotional service. That's their primary characteristic. Undivided devotional service. And such a person does something very bad. Krishna says, Sadur Eva Samantavya. I consider that person be saintly because they're rightly situated. And then the next verse he says, essentially, the discrepancy is corrected by me personally. I resituate them properly in devotional service. So Maharaj Parikshit did some sudurachar things. One of them wasn't so bad. One of them, he was, as a king, he was traveling about in this kingdom. He went into a forested area. And suddenly he became overwhelmed with thirst. Like he couldn't wait to get back to the palace. He, who was, could withstand a Brahmastra weapon within the womb of his mother, became overwhelmed with thirst. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. Something else was going on. Krishna was doing something. So he went looking for water in the forest. And he saw in a distance a cottage where a Brahmin was living, little simple cottage. So he went over to the cottage and entered into the cottage, and when he entered into the cottage, he saw the Brahmin was seated in meditation. But not only he was in meditation, he was in trance. And then this unbecoming behavior, again, it gets worse, he became very angry. Maharaj Parikshit became overwhelmed with anger and spoke very harsh words, saying, what kind of Brahmin are you? You don't even know the manners of how to receive a guest in your home. For those of you that know the culture of India, even, you know, not necessarily a saintly person or Brahmin will do this basic thing. Someone comes to your home and you receive them. And three simple things Prabhupada taught us. Even if you're very, very poor, you can do this, the following three things. Offer them a place to sit. Offer them some water to quench their thirst and refreshment. And some kind words. One, two, three. Those three things. So you don't even know the etiquette of how to receive a guest in your home, and you're a Brahmin, and I'm the king. I'm the emperor. I'm the king of kings. And you're just sitting there. You're just sitting there because he was absorbed in meditation and trance. And Maharaj Parikshit knows what meditation and what trance of meditation is, and still he was angry. So he, in anger, he stormed out of the cottage. And the third thing, he saw outside the cottage the body of a dead snake. So impulsively, he reached with his sword, picked up with the tip of his sword the snake, went back into the cottage and put it around the shoulder of the Brahmin in trance, saying, this is a fitting garland for a person like you. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. That's sudurachar. And then he left. He went back to the palace. And as he was going back into palace, he had one of those uh-oh experiences. Uh-oh. I did something really bad. And as he was contemplating, where did this come from? It's something like Valmiki, when he spoke those harsh words about the hunter that had killed the birds in the water, and he spoke really harshly. So Maharishi Parikshit was like that, saying, where did this come from? But I've done something very, very wrong, and I'm going to get it. A reaction is coming to me. And like the teaching that we find in the 10th canto, chapter 14, Lord Brahma, after he had his little uh-oh experience of offending Krishna, stealing the calves and the cowherd boys, and then Brahma offered his prayers, he offered this one very nice prayer where he says, I know that there's going to be reaction for what I've done. My position is, I'll accept whatever it is. Whatever that wrongdoing that I've done, I deserve some reaction, and I accept it. I'm not going to invest my consciousness in trying to, well, it wasn't really that bad, or reduce the thing, or work around the problem, or I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to, whatever it is, it's deserving, I'll accept it. So instead, I'm going to invest my consciousness in one thing. That one thing is fixing my mind on the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. Let my mind not budge one fraction of an inch from the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. For by doing so, I know that I will enter the kingdom of God. I mean, what he says is, that just as the sun, by Vedic culture, they don't have to have wills. The sun, by law, receives the property of the father. He just has to survive the father, and then the father is deceased, and whatever is the property of the father becomes the property of the son. So I'm just going to keep, in his case, Lord Brahma, who is his father? Lord Vishnu. And what's the property of Lord Vishnu? It's the spiritual world. If I just keep my mind fixed upon the Personality of Godhead, through whatever the tribulation is that's going to come my way, I know that I'll go back to Godhead. It's a good verse to remember. You know, every 20, 30 years you have a problem, right? Sometimes. And when that problem comes, it's a good verse to remember. Let your mind not budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. Whatever may happen, this or that, let your mind not budge an inch from the Personality of Godhead. So Maharishi Parikshit was thinking like that. Let me accept whatever it is. So he was already set. Let me just fix my mind on Krishna. So meanwhile, back in the cottage of the sage, the Brahmin who was meditating, after some time his son came back from his day's activity at school or whatever he was doing and playing with the other children, and he came back and he came into the cottage and he saw his father with a dead snake around his neck. He was shocked. And he went out the door and was asking, what happened? How did this happen? And they said, the king must have done it because he came and entered the cottage. And then the little Brahmin boy became really angry. And he knew from his father how to utter different mantras for different purposes. And so he uttered a mantra that would curse the king, that he would die from the bite of a snake bird. Snake bird. No. That's what birds do. They flap their wings and they fly. And snakes crawl on the ground. There's no such thing as a snake bird. There's birds and there's snakes, but there's not a snake bird. So what's a snake bird? It's something mystical. It's through mantra, he created something mystical. Then his father's meditation was completed, and he heard the whole thing from his, "Oh, Daddy, the king, he did this terrible thing, and I cursed him. He's going to die in 7 days." So what did how did the father feel, the Brahmin, the sage? He had two very prominent feelings. One was, he was very, very, very unhappy that his son had done what he had done. He had taught his son some things, but the things that he taught his son were misused. And this is a very important lesson. Something very powerful in the hands of a person that doesn't have character can be very dangerous. In fact, Prabhupada writes in his purports of this section that this is the beginning of Kali Yuga. The mark of the beginning of Kali Yuga is where the position of the Brahmana, that's a very powerful position, is misused for lack of character or quality. Because the knowledge of the Vedas is very powerful, but you put knowledge, just think about, technology. Put technology in the hands of people that don't have character. Can they do bad things? You bet they can do bad things. The media is filled with reports of people doing bad things just by having a little knowledge of how to do things with technology. Without listing it, you just look in any day's news report. There's this thing in Boston, just two kids have figured out how to blow up people using technology. And you can learn it online, how to blow up people. You think it's funny? I don't think it's funny. The technology can be terribly used. So his father was feeling so bad. I've trained my son, but he doesn't have character. And the other thing he was feeling bad is, now the king is going to die. So he wanted to inform the king. But he knew that if he went himself to inform the king would feel double bad. Now I know I'm going to die. Now the person who I've offended is standing before me. So he didn't go himself. He sent a messenger to inform the king with full apology for what my son has done, but you should know in 7 days you're going to die. When Maharaj Parikshit received the news that he was going to die, he wasn't surprised at all. The father was saying to his son, this is way beyond, it's disproportionate completely to what the king has done. It wasn't good, but it's not death penalty. This is way, way wrong. But the king accepted it. I've made this big offense. This is the Lord's plan. I accept it. And in accepting it, he did the responsible thing. He turned the kingdom over to his son, Janamejaya, immediately. Royal crown is gone. Royal robe is gone. Royal treasury is gone. And he took on the cloth of a mendicant and went to sit by the sacred river and invited all the sages of the kingdom to come and to instruct him what he should do with the remaining 7 days of his life. So, skipping a lot of very nice things, the sages came, and his kingdom was a big kingdom. It was the whole world. In fact, it says that they came from all over the universe because he was such a qualified king. And then he spoke the following message to them. I'm just going to now summarize 4 verses. He said, you're all very merciful to have come here, because normally persons like you, you're on the path to transcendence. And individuals like me, involved with worldly affairs and power and control and wealth and military. You stay away from persons like me, like refuse. But you've come because you're very compassionate. Then he said, whatever is the plan of the Supreme Lord, whatever this snake bird or mystical thing is that's going to kill me, let it come. Because I understand that the Supreme Lord is very kind. He knows that I'm attached to family life. And the only way that I would give up attachment to family life is the most powerful of all emotions, fear. Krishna is very kind. And there's another lesson in this, embedded within this history. How do you deal with what Prabhupada calls reversals? Reversals means, can we do something with this? Mataji, can you take your computer and put it away?
Sure.
I mean, like, put it away?
Yeah.
Just put it away.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. When you're, let's say, you're going in a car, and you're going this direction, and the next thing you know, you're going in that direction. That's a reversal. Or you're going along in life, to do, and the next thing you know, you're going in another direction. Something unexpected happens in life, and the normal course of affairs is like this, and you don't know where it came from, you don't know why. Something else starts to happen, and it's happening, and it's happening, and whoa, what's happening? A reversal. That's how Prabhupada called it. So when you meet a reversal, how do you handle it? And one of the things that I'll advise is, those are really good opportunities to see where your attachments are. Where does your mind go to take shelter? Your mind goes where your attachments are. I had this experience once, was when distributing books as a brahmachari. One of the places that I was going to for a while was the airport. And there used to be some other devotees that would go, but gradually they stopped going. I just continued to go, so I went by train. I would go out by train and come back by train. And where the temple used to be, I had to switch trains. We took the A train from the airport, switched to the F train to get to the temple. So it was 9 o'clock at night, and I got off the A train, crossed the platform to get to the F train, and right there on the platform there was somebody dying. And everybody was like, you know what happens when somebody's dying? There's a whole crowd of people around the guy. And everyone's saying, you know, is there anything we can do for you? You know, do you want something? And in a, like, you know, weak voice, he called out, can I have a cigarette? Get the guy a cigarette, light up a cigarette. So he couldn't even lift his arm to, you know, take the cigarette out of his mouth, so someone was taking the cigarette out of his mouth. And then, is there anything else you want? Anything else you want? He said, I want Susie. And then he died. With the cigarette, you know, just out of his mouth, and I want Susie. So, and then he left. So, when you're, guess what happened? Where the soul goes, whatever your mind is fixed upon at the time of death, that state you will attain without fail. And when danger comes, your mind goes to that thing that you're most attached to. So, Maharaj Parikshit was attached to the personality of Godhead, so that's where his mind went. And he was understanding that there's an impediment for your mind going to Krishna is some material attachment. And it's not unusual for people to be inordinately attached to family. And there's no question of having family life without appropriate level of attachment or concern for family members. And that's not, the Bhagavatam doesn't say, you know, don't give a darn about your family members. But excessive attachment is a problem. I'll give three examples. One of them is Queen Kunti. On Mother's Day, we were honoring Queen Kunti, at least I was. So she's up there. She had realization of Krishna fully. Yet Kunti was praying to Krishna, please remove the attachment that I have, the material portion of the attachment that I have for my sons, the Pandavas, and for my father's family, the Vrishnis. Because the situation was, Krishna was leaving Hastinapur to go back to Dwarka, because Krishna's palaces and his wives and everybody were off there in Dwarka. And the purpose of his coming to Hastinapur had been fulfilled. His purpose was to give protection to the Pandavas. So now that Yudhisthira was installed in the throne, Krishna's leaving Hastinapur. And Kunti's realizing, I and my sons who are living here in Hastinapur are going to be feeling great pain of separation from you when you go. But my father's family, the Vrishnis and everybody else, they're in Dwarka, and they'll be very happy when you come back. And they're in great separation from you while you're here. So if you're here, they're feeling separation. If you're there, we're feeling separation. And so my feelings are torn between the two. So she prays, let the material portion of my attachment be taken away, leaving only spiritual attachment. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Only spiritual attachment. And in the purport, Prabhupada gives the formula. There is such a thing as only spiritual attachment in family life, and that's where Krishna is at the center. When you're in the spiritual conception of life, and Krishna is at the center, so I'm over here, I'm this family member, and he or she are over there, that's family member, and Krishna is in the center. And we're servants of Krishna, serving Krishna together, helping one another to go to Krishna, and to serve Krishna's will and Krishna's purpose. And that's what our family is. We have different roles and duties and responsibilities and things like that, but we all have this one common purpose. And that way, the affinity for one another becomes spiritualized. That's Queen Kunti. She was praying to Krishna to remove the material portion of her attachment for family members. Then another nice example is Devahuti. Do you know who is Devahuti? Devahuti? We were discussing this morning. Devahuti was the wife of Kardama Muni. This is in the very, very beginning of creation. Devahuti was one of the daughters of the first Manu. Remember? Swayambhuva Manu. And he had a daughter, well, three daughters. Devahuti. She wanted to marry Kardama Muni. So a marriage was arranged. The Swayambhuva Manu went to visit Manu in his forest place. And Lord Vishnu, the section that we're reading, Lord Vishnu had come and showed his form to Kardama Muni. Then they had a conversation. That was what we talked about last night. Mm-hmm. So in that conversation, Lord Vishnu said, I know your heart's desire. You wish to have me as your son. That will come to pass. in just a few days, Manu is going to come. And he's going to suggest that you marry Devahuti. So say yes. And in your marriage with Devahuti, I will appear as your son. Like, before it even happened, he was told, like, the whole program. He'd even given his script to read. Just say yes. So Devahuti and Kardamuni were married. And because it was a previous age where duration of life was very long, they lived together for a very long time in the forest where she was doing the same austerities that he was doing. Only she was used to palace life and he was used to forest life. It's that second cry that's really loud. Okay. That sound vibration was made especially for brahmacharis. Hare Krishna. Devahuti. So she lived for a long, long, long time with her husband, and she became thin and matted hair, and you know, basically emaciated. Although her beauty was already naturally there, just covered by the austerities that she was doing, but radiant from her austerities at the same time. Anyway, so Kardama Muni made an arrangement, appreciating her devotion to her husband and to Lord Vishnu, and so he arranged, and through mystic power, a city that floated and flew in the air just by mystic power. He was a powerful mystic, and several maidservants have made arrangements for all refineries for Devahuti, and they lived for some time and had children. And after some time, he, Kardamuni, had agreed to marry Devahuti on one condition, or with one condition, that when there was a son of age to maintain Devahuti, his daughter, that he would again go back to the forest and she would be then maintained by her son. And that's Vedic culture. So she agreed. He and the father agreed. Then when it happened, because they'd been together for tens of thousands of years, let's say in our scale of the league, be like, you know, marriage for, you know, 40, 50 years, he left. And Devahuti was feeling great attachment for her husband. So she's addressing her son, the personality of Godhead, Kapiladeva, saying, please remove this attachment for family life. And she went on and on about it, saying, you know, it's completely clouded my intelligence. I can't think straight. I'm disturbed. I'm beside myself with anxiety. And this is your energy. It's your deluding potency. You put it there. Please remove it and give instead your internal potency. And Kapiladeva smiled, thinking, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur knows the thoughts of the Supreme Lord. He was thinking, Mother Devahuti, why are you speaking like this? You're my mother. You're a pure devotee. And I'm your son, and you're speaking like you're an ordinary person. You're not an ordinary person. But you just want others to benefit from your question, so I'll oblige you and give you the answer. But Devahuti was understanding the peril of inordinate, excessive attachment. And so many of our devotees, practicing devotees, also with families, and we have to be responsible in family life and, you know, care for one another and so forth and so on. Towards what end? towards the end of pleasing Krishna and helping one another become attached to Krishna. And if that is the objective of our life and family life, then it spiritualizes the whole thing. And to the degree that that's diminished, or in some cases, like, disappears, then it blocks self-realization. It blocks understanding who we really are. It blocks real happiness. It blocks everything auspicious. So, back to Maharaj Parikshit, he was appreciating Krishna is very kind. He's done this somehow just to help me overcome attachment so that I can then go back to Godhead. Because if I'm attached to that which is of this world, if I'm thinking of a cigarette and Susie or something that's of this world not in relation to Krishna, then I'll take birth again in this physical realm somewhere. So affection for family is natural. Let that affection be centered on affection for Krishna. Then it becomes fully spiritual. The potency is there for it to become fully spiritual. And then he said to the Brahmins, my request is that you engage in describing the glories of Lord Vishnu, because I'm attached to Krishna. My heart has been given to Krishna. I'm with Krishna. And if you continue singing the glories and the fame and the names of Lord Vishnu, then I'll go to him at the time of death. Then the last verse, these ones I'm going to speak about, he said, I have one benediction that I'd like from you, a request. And the request is, if I don't go back to Godhead, and if the Lord wishes me to take birth again, then please give your blessings for the following. Please give your blessings that I may eternally be attached to the personality of Godhead. That sounds pretty good. But he added something else. And may I always remain in the association of his devotees. Because in the association of devotees, what do? You do things that are in service to Krishna, because that's what devotees do. So may we always remain in the association of devotees. But that wasn't the end of it. He asked for one more thing. He asked for, may I maintain a friendly disposition towards all living entities. Then it's complete. Because there's Krishna, there's Krishna's devotees, and there's all other living entities, not just even all people, but all living entities. And what's a friendly disposition towards other living entities? There's different, the presentation that I was going to show you would have been much shorter too. Was friendship. There's in relation to Krishna. Because there's nine processes of bhakti, right? Does anybody know the verse? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam. Let me hear it. Very good. Which one is, what does Sakya mean? Sakya. Friendship. The relationship that Arjun had with Krishna was friendship. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti. Because you're my bhakta and my sakha, my friend, you can understand everything that I'm saying. Right? Remember Krishna says that? Bhagavad Gita? So, to be friendly towards all living entities isn't just, you know, hey, how's it going? How's everything? Right? People ask me that question. Do they really mean it? How is everything? But, you know, how is everything? Okay, the person's friendly. the real standard of friendship is where there's a spirit soul, and there's a spirit soul, and you're relating spirit soul to assist that spirit soul to connect with Krishna. And even people that don't know what a spirit soul is, if that's the consciousness that you have for others, then you're their real friend. Just like it's just funny. I was at Washington University in St. Louis. It was just the week before exams. They have study week. You know, many of the students study because it's a very intense college, but they also do some frivolous thing because they have a study week. So during that week, we had a little gathering of the students that were like the core students involved in the Bhakti Yoga Club on campus. And the devotees from the temple had made some kind of juice, like beaten carrot juice or something like that, and they put it in a glass on the table. And I was noticing on the table there was a spider. He was playing. He was like going down on the spider web and then up and then down, and like a yo-yo, up and down, up and down. And I kind of didn't pay attention. And after some time, I went to reach for the glass, and one of the people at the student group went, "Oh, what?" He said, "Well, the spider went inside the cup." "And you were about to drink from the cup, and I didn't want you to drink the spider." So, you know, we figured out a way to give the spider some prasadam, because that's what he wanted, apparently. Maybe he was just like the color and didn't know it was prasadam, but so we arranged for the spider to not be in the glass anymore, but get some prasadam, because we were thinking, spirit soul. If he gets a little prasadam, better than if he doesn't. Who knows what will happen if he takes prasadam. Prabhupada indicated once, if lower life forms receive prasadam, then they skip many of the evolutionary stages and can come very quickly to the position of human form of life. And they may misuse it, but at least they come very quickly. So, like that, being a friend of others, even people you don't know, say in your place of work, or in the marketplace, or whatever you go. If your thought is, here are spirit souls, that I'm carrying some devotion for Krishna, and Krishna kindly give me the inspiration, the intelligence, create the opportunity where, in a favorable way, I can give something in relation to Krishna to others. Then you're their friend. You're the best friend. You may not know exactly how to do it, and it's not like you have to run around and be a fanatic. But if you're thinking those good thoughts, those devotional thoughts, Krishna will give some opportunities, and you're in the position, at least, of being the instrument of Krishna and acting as their best friend. It may be just giving some prasadam to a spider, or some things. You're in your workstation, you have a picture of Krishna, and people walk by and say, "What's that?" And then you can tell them, "What's that?" Or whatever, something. Just each of us has a role to play like that. We mix, young people mix in school, and older people mix in the workplace with people that we're never going to meet otherwise. So if there's somehow, in some way, at least if that desire is there, then you can serve as a model. Here's how a Vaishnava conducts their life. This is how we eat. This is how we speak. This is how we treat other people. This is how we work for Krishna, and so on. We don't do certain things. We don't lie. We don't talk prajalpa. This is the life of one who is a devotee of Krishna. And just, you're an example of that. You don't have to be judgmental of other people or something, or stay away from them like they're the plague. You're acting in a way that's showing by example. You're the perambulatory Bhagavad Gita. And then at some point somebody may ask you, what's up with you? You're always very calm and peaceful. And so on. It happens. And that's a service that you can do. So in a thoughtful way. You know, I'm giving these examples of workplace, but I could, you know, I travel all the time. Like, maybe too much. And I'm very conscious of the fact that whatever I do, people are judging all of you by what I do. They don't know what Hare Krishna movement is. They don't know what ISKCON is, but they see me, and however I speak, and however I conduct myself, I'm being judged. I'm very, very aware of it. So, you know, being polite and, you know, and answering their curiosity questions and all those things. You know, I was sharing this the other day. Some people ask, are you with a religious organization? And I'm sometimes tempted to say, it's not Halloween. Yes, I'm with a religious organization. How did you know? With a smile and a laughter. And then they say, well, you know, are you a Buddhist monk? That's 9 times out of 10, that's the question. Are you a Buddhist monk? Anyway, it's not that they really want to know. It's just a curiosity passing thing. So every now and then, some people want to know, and then you can tell a little bit more. But otherwise, it's just a curiosity. So how I interact with them, it's not just that person, but there's other persons watching that person, and they're judging by how I carry myself, and you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's me. And then there's some dialogue and conversation, and so I'm creating an opportunity for some persons to form an impression and gain something about Krishna. I always have a book, and if people ask those curiosity questions, if you'd like, I can give you this little book. You know, it's one of the little paperback ones. It's just real easy, Beyond Birth and Death or something, On the Way to Krishna or something. And we can all do like that. You don't have to like go on book distribution in your office every day. But if you can carry literature, and if people have a question, you have something for them. And et cetera. So those three things, and I only did half because there isn't time. There's the three things that Maharaj Parikshit requested: attachment for the personality of Godhead, association with the Lord's devotees, and a friendly disposition towards all living beings. Now that's the first canto, chapter 19. Now if we had another hour, I could go through a whole other narration and end up with the florist. When Krishna was entering Mathura, he asked for the same three things. Before the florist was the washerman, and he was insulting. He not only lost the clothing, he lost his head, literally. The weaver was the next encounter with Krishna, and it was practically the same language, and the weaver was very happy, and Krishna said, he didn't even ask him for what benediction you would like. He said, you'll, after this life, you'll attain the spiritual world where you have Sarupya Mukti, the same form as the Supreme Lord. And during this life, you know, this prosperity, that good fortune, and so on, just from the little service of giving him some ornaments. And then with the florist, he asked the florist, what did he want? And the florist asked, because the florist was, it's a long story, there's some time, but he was already attached to Krishna. Well, tell. One of our acharyas describes it this way. Because his occupation was a florist, he was concerned where to get good flowers. And he heard in Vrindavan they have some very good flowers. So from time to time he would go to Vrindavan and try to find some good flowers. And one day lo and behold, there was Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys, engaged in their pastimes of herding the cows. And he saw the beautiful form of Krishna. And he became completely enchanted and stunned and stayed for a long time just staring in fixed attention upon Krishna. So he would go back regularly and look for Krishna. I mean, he would look for flowers. But he would look for Krishna. He became attached to Krishna. So when Krishna came to Mathura, he was already attached to Krishna. So when Krishna came to his house, Krishna came right to his house. He was jubilant. He received Krishna with all honor and bathed his feet and sprinkled the water on the heads of his family members and spoke beautiful words saying, my life, my home, my ancestry, my family, my possessions, everything is now sanctified and made perfect just by your placing your lotus feet in my house. And Lord Krishna said, you please me very much by your devotion. Please ask for any benediction that you would like. And he asked for the same thing, same three things. He just, the last one was stated a little bit differently. Attachment with the Supreme Lord. Association with your devotees. And compassion towards all living beings. But that's, you know, real compassion is the same as real friendship, and it's on the platform of the soul. Somebody of that caliber understands that. We may not. We may think compassion means something else. Philanthropy and altruism and, you know, good works. But real friendship is on the platform of the soul. That's how we're being trained by Srimad Bhagavatam. And its message is very pleasing to listen to. It's all centered on Krishna. From beginning to end, it's centered on Krishna. So our attachment for Krishna increases just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The qualities and how to exhibit those qualities, the charm and the attractiveness of those qualities awakens in our heart by hearing these wonderful personalities, and we associate with them, and those qualities also gradually become our qualities also. It's I'm a Srimad Bhagavatam fan. I really like Srimad Bhagavatam. And I think I better end too, because when I made my flight to go from here to the next place, they canceled the flight, and now it's have to leave the house at 4:25 in the morning to make the flight. So I'm going to abruptly put on the brake pedal and if there's any discussion, it's a little discussion, then I'm going to, and in advance, pardon myself, and I'm going to squid out the door and see you next time. Yes?
Maharaj, so on friendship, even within devotees, so we like to associate with some. We have,
yes,
choice.
Yes.
So how do we understand? Is it a good thing or...
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh, it's not only a good thing. It's an essential thing. Essential on many levels. We're social beings. We want friendship. We want sangha. So it's natural. But naturally also, because we're devotees, we want association with those who wish to go to Krishna, as we wish to go to Krishna, because it'll help us go to Krishna. It's the bundle of sticks example. It's essential because we stay together, we can't be broken. And we can easily be broken if we don't stick together. In fact, that's one of the things that happens before somebody has a problem, is they go separately. And they find reasons why they're going separately, and they think it's the right thing to do, and then they get broken. So we want the association. But the purpose of that association is to help us go to Krishna, to serve one another to go to Krishna. So it's perfectly natural. It's one of the things that we're enjoined as Madhyama Adhikaris. We do four things: worship Krishna, make friendship with devotees, extend ourselves in a kind, compassionate way to innocent people, and avoid the atheistic personalities. That's we're mandated to do that. It's what we're supposed to do, and it's natural for us to do it. We just need to go about it the right way, not just like hang out kind of way.
So Maharaj, we prefer some devotees, you know.
Your question is, we like some more than others, and is that okay?
Yeah.
No, okay, I didn't get your question. I'm sorry. Sure, it's natural. It's natural. One of my godbrothers, I'll skip the name, shared with me something that has stayed with me for a long, long time. It's those who have similar service or similar propensity, it's natural for us to have affinity. At the same time, the unity in diversity principle is really important, and that is persons who have a different service and a different propensity to appreciate them, hear from them, spend time with them, learn from them, appreciate, and then share. And so it's like, it's a nice thing to do, to get out of our little group kind of, you know, we have like interests, the book distributors, the kirtan singers, the preachers, the pujaris, the administrators, and associate with others that do different services, because there's such diversity. Could you take this little boy into the next room or somewhere? Little girl or whatever. Girl? Short hair. Okay. Okay, it's getting a little difficult to concentrate, so I think we're just going to call it close. Thank you all very much, and I'm going to distribute this prasadam and then run. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.